Good evening and welcome to Indie Radio News, the weekly radio news program from The Independent, a free progressive monthly newspaper and online news site based here in New York. We cover social justice movements and the issues they are fighting for, both here in the city and around the world. We are your hosts, Elia Grahan and Lydia McMullen-Laird.
We are joined now by John Tarleton, the editor-in-chief of The Independent. John wrote an article for this month's issue of The Indy that looks at how the Republican Party has gained power over the past half century. It's called The Long Game, What the Left Can Learn from the GOP's Rise to Power. Welcome, John.
Hi, Lydia. It's great to be here.
In our last segment, we heard from Greg Pallast about voter suppression. And if you missed that segment, you can check it out on the Independent SoundCloud. So you argue that voter suppression is just one tactic in a much larger effort by the Republicans to consolidate right-wing power. In your article, you talk about some of the examples of this, including the founding of Fox News by media mogul Robert Murdoch in 1996, the Bush-Gore election in 2000, and how Republicans exploited 9/11. What stands out as some of the common themes in terms of the strategy that Republicans have used to gain power over the last few decades?
Yes, I was inspired to write this piece last month. After the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation, there was a lot of anguish over among activists seeing the Supreme Court land firmly in the hands of the right wing. And with the midterm elections coming up, I wanted to try to give people a sense of how we ended up in this situation where the Republican Party, which their agenda is not that popular with the general public, yet they control most of the levers of power in the country right now. So how did this happen? And I did look back over time. In part, I wanted to do this to give those of us on the left a sense of like what it would take to reverse this and what we might be able to learn from the Republicans. Because while their agenda is very malicious and harmful, clearly they understood something that got them where they are.
And how did this get started, or what sort of prompted this strategy?
Well, at the conservative movement in this country has never accepted any notion of social progress. That they resented the New Deal reforms of the 1930s greatly, and then the progress we saw for all sorts of historically oppressed groups in the movements of the 1960s was also something they never accepted. And so by the late 1960s, you had a situation where the left was gaining strength. You had all these social movements that were calling into question all sorts of traditional social arrangements, and also questioning capitalism, imperialism, the whole system. And while the right-wing opposition to social progress doesn't begin at any one particular moment, I started my piece with looking at a memo that a corporate attorney named Lewis Powell wrote in 1971. He served on the board of directors of a number of corporations and wrote this memo for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce months before Richard Nixon put him on the Supreme Court. And Powell was essentially looking at how the power of big business and the free enterprise system, as he called it, could be restored in this country. And he argued for a number of different measures to essentially influence the media, academia, and change the whole conversation around business and conservative values in this country.
And can you give some examples of how that has played out after the Powell memo?
Sure. So one clear way was that you started to see a number of conservative think tanks open up. The Heritage Foundation is the largest and longest running that really became these propaganda factories for introducing ideas into the media and the larger public. Also, a big business began to form groups like the Business Roundtable to much more aggressively advocate for their agenda. And while Powell was concerned mostly with restoring the power of big business, ultimately to be able to do that, they had to find the conservative movement had to build a larger mass base. And that's where you start to see the alliance with evangelical Christians and other social conservatives who were alarmed by the more promiscuous culture that came out of the 1960s and wanted to turn back the clock on abortion rights and gay rights and a number of other reforms from that era. And So that those are the those pieces began to come together, and then we start to see the agenda moving.
So in some of the examples you give in your article, for example, exploiting 9/11, or you know, the election in 2000, these are strategies that the left might not want to adopt just because they had such negative impacts on the years after. So when you say in the title of your article what the left can learn from the GOP, what are some things that you would recommend for the left, and what do you mean by that in terms of lessons that the left can learn?
It's not to replicate their actions and how they've used their power, but to understand how they got where they were to be in a position to do those things. So how do we get to a position where we can do the things we want to do, which are obviously much more positive policies?
And what do you see as the weakness in the left right now in the strategy that the left has used as opposed to the GOP?
Well, I think first of all, they have to understand the Republicans have access to vast resources. The left is always under-resourced. Nonetheless, I think the key things that we can learn from the conservative movement is they were incredibly persistent over many decades. And they understood the importance of winning the battle of ideas in the public. They also did all the like grunt work on the ground. They first started running for school boards and state legislatures and all of that. And they had setbacks along the way. They had numerous setbacks, but they never really got discouraged. They just kept on going. Whereas on the left, we tend to sort of have a more reactive approach, like the Kavanaugh situation. Like everybody becomes alarmed, or Obama gets elected, everybody's excited, but then the enthusiasm dissipates, the organization and infrastructure isn't quite there, and so we don't have the same consistency of effort. We tend to be more episodic.
So going forward, what strategy do you think the left should adopt?
Well, in a way, I think the money quote from the Powell memo is something worth reiterating. As he wrote, strength lies in organization, in careful long-range planning and implementation, and consistency of action over an indefinite period of years, in the scale of financing available only through joint effort, and the political power available only through united action and national organization. If we can keep that in mind, and that would certainly help a lot. And I think we're starting to see progress. I think the shocking nature of Trump's election, I think, has shocked a lot of people, not only out of apathy, but understanding that we need to build for the long run and not just be in a reactive mode.
And finally, we're just over a week away from the midterm elections. How does that play into this idea of having a long-term strategy, and how does that fit into this whole discussion?
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the piece also was to just say that, I mean, we are in a very alarming situation. What Greg Palast shows with the voter suppression in over two dozen states means that the most immediate thing about the midterms is they're essentially a Band-Aid to prevent the bleeding, and that it's crucial that people turn out for that. People who, if they have the time, can participate in various ways with, you know, phone banking, canvassing, doing whatever they can for candidates they think will help. Going beyond that, we need organization. We need to understand the importance of having both an inside and an outside strategy, having people voted in on the inside who at least sympathize with our agenda, but also that campaigns and the battle of ideas and all of that have to continue from the outside the day after the election. People can't just go home again, or we'll repeat the same cycle over and over again.
We'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us, John. For more information on this topic, you can find John's article, The Long Game, What the Left Can Learn from the GOP's Rise to Power, on the Indy's website, independent.org. That's Indy with a Y. Thank you for listening. You can catch us every Monday at 6 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM for all the latest from Indy Radio News. You can find this month's print edition of The Independent at our outdoor news boxes across the city and in local libraries, independent bookstores, and social movement centers. Follow all our latest coverage online at theindependent.org, that's Indy with a Y, and via social media. To let us know what you think of today's show, send news tips, or to find out how to subscribe to The Independent's print edition, we can be reached at 212-90-